You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Welcome to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Daniel Lee, or Photos by DLEE. So today we're going to be going over the main topic of top 6 photography-related accessories you should own and every photographer should own. We'll also go over some sort of basic news articles and just share some photography updates from myself. So to start off what I've been up to, the first thing would be that I have officially sold my Samyang lens. Mixed feelings about it, to be honest, because it was a really good lens. I don't know if it was even really a need to sell it. In 100% honesty, I had listed it on sale for both eBay and Gumtree, where you'd usually list it here in Australia. I had this sort of philosophy that if it didn't sell, I wasn't going to be upset about it because, you know, it's a great lens. But if it did sell, then I'd just sort of go with it. And as soon as I sort of went for that philosophy and actually removed it from eBay, I found someone wanted to buy it. So yeah, I just went ahead, sold it. They offered a really good price for it, like what I was asking for, which to me is a really good price. The lens retails at the moment for about $1,000 to $1,100 AUD. Yet people were trying to offer me $500. Some were trying to make me price match this old manual focus lens from I don't know how long ago. Like, you get ridiculous offers when you try to sell stuff online. So yeah, now that one's sold, I think I'll likely be getting the 85mm Art. Before I was 100% sold on it. Now I'm just sort of in the sense that looking through all my 85mm photos on, do I really need an 85mm? I do enjoy owning it. It's a great focal length to own. Can give a bit more of a unique perspective sometimes, but at the same time, do I really need it? I've been really thinking about it, you know, because if I stuck to the genres that I do enjoy, which are still life and urban photography, I honestly would only need maybe the 24mm and the 100mm. I wouldn't even need the 35 or the 85, that sort of stuff. I could easily make do with those two lenses only. Even if I wanted to do the occasional, you know, go out, take photos of food, that kind of stuff, I can easily do that with the 24 as well, because the 24-1.4, it does do what the 35 does to a sort of extent, but you'll find the 35 does look a bit nicer if you're doing, say, half-body shots of a person compared to the 24. Now, you can make half-body shots work as long as you compose it correctly with the 24, but it's just not as nice as the 35. For me personally, that's why I see it as good as owning both. Otherwise, I'm just going to wait for a good sale. Usually around Boxing Day, the sales here have a, you know, decent price. We don't really do Black Friday, Cyber Monday sales here, but you know, if they sort of do try and hop on the bandwagon and have a good price, maybe 20% off again, it's something I would consider picking up. But for now, I just have to sort of look at the photos I've taken, look at photos taken with that, and really think hard, do I really need this lens? Or should I just, you know, save myself the money? In terms of that 35mm review that I did promise, I've got that portrait that I wanted to take, the one I said that I sort of needed to complete the review. It's not like an amazing portrait, but at least it's just something to add to the review. So I'll just wait for now, see what I can do in terms of writing. I do have assignment coming up and just work is being horrible. I won't get into that because, yeah, it's a photography podcast, not something to talk about work. Otherwise, we'll start on some news topics. So in exciting news, Nikon has confirmed that the Z6II and Z7II are coming on October 14th. So they have a little countdown timer on their website, showing the countdown to when there's that official announcement, which is exciting to see. According to an article by Petapixel, Nikon has addressed some of the most pressing complaints about the current models. So the Z6II and Z7II will have dual card slots, one CF Express and one SD, improved AF for face, eye, and animal detection. Sounds like trying to match Sony and Canon there. Dual X-Speed processors, a faster max frame rate, a larger buffer, and 4K 60p video capability, and the ability to take a proper battery grip with buttons for vertical shooting. So it sounds like they're not completely new models. It's more, you know, Mark II models, just trying to fix the issues with the previous bodies. This is definitely not a bad thing. It is a good thing. The current bodies are good, no matter what people say. Although I'm, you know, never really big on Nikon, I could easily use a Z body, because if you look at my current gear, all I have is 24, 35, 85, and 90. The only thing that I believe is missing if I wanted to switch to Nikon, would be a macro lens in the 90-100mm range. Otherwise, I could easily get their 24, get their 85, and I'd be set. I'm not a professional shooter, just casual, so for me, the requirements aren't as high, but this will be announced, I think, on the day that this podcast releases, so which would be the 14th, which is a Wednesday, should be here. So I'll probably post something about it on TPE, just summarizing all the different articles and video reviews, but otherwise, hopefully it'll be, you know, no disappointments and all what everyone's expecting. I think for me, price would be the major thing I'd be curious to see. Canon, you know, will, at least here anyway, have gone quite high price with the R6. Sony have gone quite pricey as too with the A7C. The next piece of news we have is regarding a new Sigma announcement. So Sigma have announced their highly anticipated 105mm f2.8 DGDM macro for full frame mirrorless cameras. So in terms of this lens, 17 elements and 12 groups, including one special low dispersion element to minimize aberrations. The way this lens is constructed, it does allow this lens to achieve a 1-to-1 reproduction ratio at a working distance of 14 centimeters. The good thing is if you do slap on the 1.4 or 2x teleconverter, you can increase that reproduction ratio all the way to 1-to-4-to-1 or 2-to-1 respectively. As usual, it's dust and splash proof with a brass bayonet mount and 9-blade rounded aperture. It's interesting how some lenses like the 85mm Art and what Sony have used on the 85GM do use 11 blades, not 9. I'd like to see more aperture blades compared to less, like 9. Even though 9 is technically fairly standard, I would like to see the standard go up to 11 to get that really nice round bokeh. Judging by the look of the lens, it does look like it's not an adapted lens like the previous ones, and it actually is made purely from mirrorless design. The announcement article on PetaPixel doesn't specify that, but the images do look good. Depending on price, in all honesty, I would be very tempted to sell my 90mm macro in favor of this. It is priced at $800, which will probably come very similar to the AUD pricing. The main reason I would actually consider getting this lens over the Sony 90mm macro is the focal length. If I am to get that 85mm Art, this would work a lot better, having 85 than 105 rather than like 24, 35, then 85, 90mm, only 5mm difference. It does make the 85mm sort of less useful in a sense. 90mm macro is just a case of it's too similar in focal length to 85mm, so I feel like I would need to choose one or the other. I think almost every episode I mention it, but I really hate the bokeh on the 90mm macro. The shape of it is just so strange. So if this has really nice round aperture, really nice round bokeh, specular highlights, then I'd actually probably wait for this to go on sale or the price to drop a bit, then look at selling my 90mm macro in favor of this. The last one is just a very quick basic thing, but Lightroom is getting advanced color grading. So for those of you that do color grade your images, which is great to do, they are getting a more advanced panel. It's good to see them adding more features to Lightroom, but as I covered in one episode, I don't know what this is going to mean for the future, whether they get you really used to using Lightroom and then boom, switch to an online only, cloud version only, and don't offer the classic version. Hopefully that's not the case and I am wrong, but for me, they should really just, you know, be more upfront about it, even though they did, you know, sort of say they'll always offer a standalone version then when cloud only. Who knows what's going to happen with this? Hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully it isn't the case, but I guess we'll see in not too distant future in regards to that. Now, while many people may focus on which lens to buy next or which body or which tripod to get, there's many smaller photography accessories that can really help you in many different ways that get overlooked. What I'm going to do today is I'm going to discuss my top 6 photography accessories that are worth looking at, and pretty much what I'm going to do today is look at the top 6 accessories that every photographer should really own, depending on their use. Obviously, there's a huge asterisk there, but I think most people can actually benefit from all of these, so we'll get right into it. So the first accessory that I really think is beneficial to own is an L bracket. Admittedly, I only discovered these in the last few years. I had never even known of what one was for or what they did or even of their existence up until one point. I'm really glad I did find out about them because I use them all the time now, got them for both my bodies. Pretty much what they do is they attach to your body and they're shaped like an L. So rather than, it's a bit hard to say over audio, what they do is they mount to your body and then you can mount your tripod to it. But rather than it just be at the bottom like a grip sort of thing, it does have that L bit that comes up on the side. The reason for this is if you want to mount your camera in a portrait orientation on your tripod, it's not hanging out to the side. So obviously, usually with a tripod, you would attach the camera to it. And then when you want to have it in a vertical position, you'd have to have it sort of sit to the side. This takes it off center and does sort of change the balance of the tripod. Whereas with this method, you don't have that issue because it's still staying center. Although it wouldn't be as comfortable and doesn't have the same function as a battery grip, it can increase the size of the camera. So if that's something you do like, it is possible. If depending on which grip you get as well, because it has that tripod mount on there, you can also use it and connect it directly to a strap. So for me, I use a Black Rapid strap, which goes into the tripod mount. So for that, I can easily just connect it to that and then carry it around when I need to chuck it on the tripod, undo the strap, put it back on. It's not as much hassle as having to take the L bracket off each time. Now, the obvious benefit to this is if you do shoot in portrait orientation on a tripod, you're going to get a lot more stability, which is, you know, obviously something you want. It can give it that big chunkier feel if that's something you want as well. Otherwise, you know, if you don't ever use a tripod, but you prefer battery grip, that would probably be better for you. Whereas for someone like me that pretty much always uses their camera on a tripod, or at least a good majority of the time, this is something that's really beneficial. So the second item on my list is a wireless remote control. Now, you don't need to spend a lot of money on these to get something decent. For my one, I got off eBay, was only like 15 bucks. You can get one Canon, like the generic Canon one, Sony one. All they need to do is just trigger the camera. You can use something like the self-timer on your camera, but when you're doing something like bulb shooting, so you're shooting in excess of 30 seconds, the max shutter speed on a lot of bodies, this is where it comes in handy. One thing, speaking of that, I really wish a lot of cameras would add is the ability to choose the exposure length. I can't remember for certain. I think my 60 Mark II had that when I owned it, but it's been a long time, so I can't remember. But you can get wired ones, you can get wireless ones. I personally prefer the wireless ones. I have a friend, Joey, who prefers wired, as he said, when he's in a very cold country, sometimes the wireless ones will not work properly, whereas the wired ones work without issues. So pretty much whatever kind of remote control you get, they are worth it. If you're simply just shooting landscapes, it can be easy to have to kneel down to press the button and introduce more camera shake. It can be if you're in front of the camera, you're traveling, or you want to do a self-portrait, it can make it a lot easier to trigger the camera rather than having to set the focus point to make sure you're in there. You can also use your phone as a wireless remote control, but obviously it can be annoying if, you know, your phone goes to sleep, it disconnects from the Wi-Fi, so you have to reconnect to the camera each time, or you just don't want to drain your battery while you're out. There's sort of a lot of options for you no matter how you want to go about it, but for me, the wireless remote control is easily one of the best ones. The third item on this list is the rocket blower. So if you're not familiar with these, it's done by Gitos, I believe it is. It's just shaped like a small rocket and it's just an air blower. It's a very basic, simple product, but something that's very beneficial. So when you're cleaning your lenses, you can just blow off any visible dust first before you use a cloth. The same with your sensor. Whenever you're changing lenses, it's always good to have a spray of that inside to the camera to get rid of any loose dust that may be sitting on the sensor. These things go super cheap. I think I bought mine for less than $8 on eBay, so obviously it's not something that's going to break the bank. These are all fairly cheap items, easy stuff to do. If you really want to take the next level, you can also get it with some sensor swabs from, say, like VSGO sensor wipes. Those work really well. It's about, it used to be anyway, pre-COVID, 40 bucks for about 10 wipes, so do work out really well. The fourth item on my list is a gaming mouse. So you may wonder why you would need a gaming mouse for photography. The reason for this is precision. So what you can do on a gaming mouse is not only can you program functions into special buttons. So for example, I have a new layer programmed to one button, save for web program to another button, duplicate layers. I have heaps of different functions programmed into my mouse, which has about 8 buttons. This makes everything a lot quicker and easier when you are editing. You also have DPI control, which is, I believe it's DPI, where you can control the sensitivity. So I have mine set so it can go either super fast, which, you know, you don't really need for editing, but I do use for gaming, or you can go super, super slow. So if you're making fine adjustments, you can do that. Obviously, if you could get a Wacom tablet, those are even better compared to a wireless mouse because you can function both. It could even work as the same sort of thing in a lot of ways, but obviously it costs generally more for the Wacom tablet compared to the mouse. Either one will do great and will make your any brushwork in Photoshop or Lightroom much more precise. But it all comes down to which one you prefer more. I will say though, the Tablet would be my pick if I had to choose one, as it is way more precise, but the mouse you can use for everything when you're generally browsing, which you can for the tablet as well, but doesn't feel natural to me. But so it really comes down to what you're comfortable with and what suits best for your use. The fifth item on the list is a monitor calibrator. So I personally use the Spider X, I mean the Spider 4 Pro. The latest one of this, I believe, is the Spider X. Regardless of which one you get, I do recommend you use it with a different software. It's called DisplayCal. That gives a much more accurate calibration compared to the software that comes with either the Color Monkey or the Data Color ones. The reason why this is important is even if your factory your monitor comes from the factory calibrated, over time the calibration can drift slightly. So it's always good to calibrate it yourself and calibrate it regularly. I try to do mine every 3 months or so. Even 6 months, you can technically go without any sort of real major issues. You do want to have a color calibrated app. You do want to have a calibrated display, because if you're color grading and you're trying to make your image, say, very warm, if your monitor is already too warm or the color's off, then obviously it's going to look extremely warm for other people who already have a calibrated display. Although phones aren't technically calibrated, they are pretty good depending on the phone and quite close. So if majority of people are viewing your images on a phone, it's going to look off to them. And obviously, if you're doing professional work as well, you want everything to be accurate and color correct. These aren't cheap, but they do last a long time and they're a good investment. So I would 100% recommend getting one. Just do a bit of research into which one you want, because sometimes certain features aren't needed on one over the other. And I believe a lot of them, the higher priced ones, are more software based features. And if you're going to be using DisplayCal, you don't even need them anyway. And then my last and final item is a custom strap. So I personally have never used the Sony strap that came with my A7 III. When I used Canon, I did used to use the original strap a bit, but I prefer to have one of my Black Rapid straps. So I have quite a few. I have a few shoulder ones, and I also have a wrist one that just pretty much goes into the tripod mount. They are a lot more secure, you'll find, because when you look at something like the ones that come with the Sony or Canon, they got very small wires pretty much holding them in place. Nothing really super strong and steady. Whereas these ones come and attach to the actual tripod mount, which is a lot stronger compared to those small wires on the side. Just like the calibrator, depending on which one you get, they're not the cheapest, but they're something that can last you a long time. If you get something that can support a decent amount of weight, like my Black Rapid Crosshot Breve, that one can easily hold my A7 III and even my heaviest of lenses, and they're a lot more comfortable compared to the standard strap. So they would last you a lot long time, as well as more comfort when you are using your camera. So those are top 6 accessories I think every photographer should own. This list will probably vary depending on your use, what kind of photography you do, what genres, that sort of thing. But this is sort of a general guideline of, if you are unaware of these, these are something you could look into and maybe you potentially want to buy. So thanks for watching. Make sure to subscribe and like the video. Comment if you have any suggestions or what your favorite accessory would be, and let me know. Thank you. Now this concludes this episode. So thank you for listening. If you'd like to see tutorials, reviews, or find older episodes of this show, you can find it at tpepodcast.xyz. If you'd like to see my personal work, you can find me at photosbydlwe.com. All of these links will be in the show notes. Otherwise, you can find my links and everything from my website. If you did enjoy this episode, make sure to subscribe so you can be notified when we release a new episode every fortnight. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. Bye.